It is a Monday. I'm Mark Bayshore. Last week in Washington, D.C., Republican Representative Kevin McCarthy abruptly withdrew from consideration to replace John Boehner as Speaker of the U.S. House. It was the latest shock in what's been a series of surprising developments in House leadership. Now, with no clear replacement for Boehner, speculation is rampant. One name that came up last week, Michigan Republican Representative Candace Miller of Shelby Township, joining us now to talk about that and some other political happenings. Rick Pluta, managing editor and Capitol correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network. Hi, Rick.
Good morning.
Give us some context here. How is it Candace Miller's name got batted around in the first place in the Speaker of the House conversation?
Okay, and we should point out that this has really become kind of a parlor game of, you know, what's next for the chaos-ridden House Republican Conference in Washington, D.C. Now, this is considered kind of a long shot. Everyone I spoke with in D.C. over the weekend seems to think that Paul Ryan will actually cave and ultimately agree to be Speaker. The House is on a break this week, and so, you know, there's time for all the pieces to be moved around. So the idea is that if because of the this factionalism that's sort of taken over the conference lingers, is that maybe instead of while it's all sorted out, maybe the answer is a temporary speaker, a caretaker speaker, who could maybe do things that someone who wants to or needs to come back as speaker can't. And so that's why Candace Miller's name came into it.
I see.
She is a respected member from that group of roughly half a dozen people in Congress who've announced that they intend to retire. She actually brings some credentials to it, that she is the chair of the Committee on House Administration. So she has already got big responsibilities over the day-to-day operations of the House, which is part of what the Speaker has to do. But the question is, if you're going to turn to a Candace Miller or someone, you know, like that in that group of retirements, does that mean that someone who takes over as an automatic lame duck, is that liberating or debilitating when it comes to getting all the things done? The debt ceiling comes to mind that the House needs to get done. And, you know, the pressures that forced John Boehner to announce his retirement, these challenges from the so-called Freedom Caucus that Grand Rapids Congressman Justin Amash is a prominent member of, mm-hmm. you know, those aren't going to go away. And so another question might be, why would Candace Miller or anyone want what's being described these days as the worst job in Washington?
Yeah, this is all the more unusual because, frankly, nobody seems to want the job of herding these cats.
Right.
I mean, Ryan is a policy guy in his heart and is widely respected. I think his name is being batted around, I take it, from what I've heard, just because
Paul Ryan, according to the people that I talked to in our delegation, that Ryan is sort of seen as the lone singular unifying figure who can get a majority of the conference to come together to elect a leader and ultimately a new Speaker of the House. Because remember, they're sort of distinct positions, that the Speaker of the House is actually a constitutional office and is selected by the House in its entirety, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, but he comes out of the majority, or she comes out of the majority conference, which is the Republicans right now. So you've got to get the internal political stuff squared away before you get to actually, you know, the formal official selecting a leader of that chamber of Congress.
Candace Miller has been rumored to have gubernatorial hopes here in Michigan.
Has done nothing to douse those rumors.
Uh-huh. Well, let's speculate just a little bit more. Could becoming Speaker jeopardize a run for governor, or could it enhance her stature as a even a caretaker Speaker of the House to run for Michigan governor?
Well, I think you could argue both sides of it. On the one hand, it would certainly be an incredible way to cap a congressional career to be, you know, asked to step in and serve as the leader of the chamber. Also, one of the responsibilities of the speaker in his or her role as the Republican leader is to go out and campaign and fundraise for the caucus for Republicans. And so that means that she would potentially be building a network of prospective donors that stretches not just across Michigan, but across the nation. That would certainly be a useful thing for a candidate for governor, to have people in other states being willing to go, oh yeah, I remember hearing her. I'll write a check for the Michigan in the Michigan gubernatorial race. The downside is that as soon as you take the job, you become a target. That you become a target of this Freedom Caucus. And like I said, Justin Amash in Grand Rapids is a prominent member. Is he going to go to work to being lifting up a Candace Miller or whoever the speaker is, or go to work trying to, you know, stop them from doing the things that they're trying to do? And remember that a big job of the speaker is to go to the other party, to go to the president of the United States, who right now is in the other party, and compromise.
Right. Rick Pluta is managing editor and Capitol correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network. John Boehner has said he will stay as speaker until someone else is chosen. Here on Monday now, do we have any better handle on how long that might take?
No, like I said, the House is on break this week. And so, you know, the members are going to, you know, be talking to each other informally, you know, probably by phone, since most of them will be back in their districts, and just trying to sort through where things stand. And like I said, the one universal thing that I heard was that a lot of people are really hoping that Paul Ryan will give up on his, you know, sort of refusal to consider it because he wants to remain chairman of the Ways and Means Committee. He took that over from Michigan's Dave Camp in this session, and agree to set aside maybe his other ambitions in order to be a consensus candidate for Speaker of the House.
Since we've got you with us here, Rick, let's look at a couple of court cases with implications for Michigan. Tomorrow, the U.S. Supreme Court will revisit the question of juveniles being sentenced to life without parole. What's being decided exactly, and how does it affect Michigan?
Sure. In 2013, the United States Supreme Court said automatic life without parole. That is, there's no discretion for the, you know, for the judge, for the system. Automatic life without parole for juveniles is cruel and unusual punishment, unconstitutional. What the court did not say is whether or not that decision is only prospective or whether it applies retroactively. Now, this is a case out of Louisiana, but Michigan is one of, I think, three states that has said that the decision does not apply retroactively. And those three states make up about half of the juvenile lifers in the country. The Michigan Supreme Court, not the U.S. Supreme Court, the Michigan Supreme Court said, look, a lot of years have passed in many of these cases. Witnesses, victims, loved ones have disappeared. Evidence may no longer be available. That a meaningful rehearing on parole just isn't possible. We also have Attorney General Bill Schuette, who's been at the forefront of this, saying that victims were promised certainty when these sentences were handed down.
The difficulty and the tragedy of when you've lost a husband or a wife, a loved one, a family member, and having to go through that one more time is really heart-wrenching on the victims.
So Schuette and prosecutors say legally this is not a substantive ruling but a process ruling from the Supreme Court, and therefore it should not need to apply in past cases. But of course that will be something the Supreme Court decides. Now the ACLU, Advocates for People Imprisoned as Teens, they say, look, this decision said automatic life without parole is unconstitutional. It's an essential constitutional right. Cruel and unusual punishment. And the 350-something Michigan inmates who are sentenced to automatic life without parole here as juveniles, well, that they should get parole hearings. Mm-hmm. And there's also some federal litigation that's working its way through and the Michigan question as well.
Rick Pluta, managing editor, Capitol correspondent for MPRN, the Michigan Public Radio Network, is my guest here on Monday. Secondly, here, let's look at the Michigan Supreme Court. This week, it will hear oral arguments in a number of cases, and one involves a prevailing wage ordinance enacted by the city of Lansing. In this case, the city is the defendant in a suit brought by the Associated Builders and Contractors, ABC. What's at the heart of this?
Okay, the Associated Builders and Contractors, they are the non-union builders, building contractors, you know, here in Michigan, and they have had prevailing wage laws and ordinances in their sights for a long time. As a matter of fact, I would say that this is really the conservative versus union battle of 2015, and it's playing out in a petition drive in the state legislature, and now, like you said, a state Supreme Court near you. Prevailing wage ordinances say that contractors who get public contracts, government contracts, have to pay according to a particular formula, and it matches usually what the union wages are for that region. That's why it's called the prevailing wage. It's the prevailing union wage. Lansing has one. At least two dozen other county cities, townships have them. The state has one. The challenge says there's a 1923 state Supreme Court decision that bars local governments from adopting their own prevailing wage ordinances. One in the circuit court. The state court of appeals, though, said, look, there's been a lot of other court decisions since 1923, new statutes and a new state constitution that all say it's okay for local governments to require this.
The legislature's been considering prevailing wage bills as well. Is the timing of this lawsuit connected to that in any way?
Probably not, although they are happening at about the same time. ABC, those non-union builders who brought the lawsuit, have also led a petition drive to ban prevailing wage at the state and local levels. Those signatures are in the process of being certified by state election officials right now. So you can look for that to play out in the legislature probably next month.
I want to, as long as we have you, Rick, I'd like to run one more thing past you. Last week, we had State Rep Andy Shore of Lansing on the program. He's a Democrat. He talked about his gun-free zones measure that would designate schools and similar places as gun-free. Legally, right now, they are not. There are some people who are certified and authorized to carry guns.
It is a strange wrinkle of Michigan law that you cannot carry a concealed weapon in a school. However, if you have a concealed weapons permit, you may open carry in a school.
How interesting. Here's my question, though. I know Republican Senator Patrick Kolbeck wants legislation that sounds precisely the opposite of Representative Shore's. His legislation would ban gun-free zones. Is it fair to call those diametrically opposed proposals?
I would say that is absolutely accurate. And the recent shootings have just reignited that particular debate in Lansing.
We want to thank Rick Pluta, managing editor and Capitol correspondent for the Michigan Public Radio Network. Thank you, Rick.
Oh, you bet. Always a pleasure.